Well, Jerry Corsi is going to stay with us another hour and take your phone calls during this truly extraordinary time period in our lives. We'll be back with him and you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Jerry Corsi with us. Jerry, do you think, regardless of who becomes the president, that we can turn this around, that we can make this work?
Well, George, it's interesting because, you know, I wrote the article that there's a draft movement for you to be president.
Well, in that case, we have to say yes.
Yes.
We can turn it around.
I can turn it around. I think, George, we've always got to think positively that, you know, a current president, the future presidents will solve and make positive contributions to solving problems that we face as a nation. I think we can't rely just on the president. We have to have a strong Congress, and we have to have strong leadership in communities and states and families. Leadership goes down to the individual level when you really get down to it, individual responsibility. And I think that, yes, as a nation, I continue to believe our best days are ahead of us, and I continue to have great hope that we can, as Americans, advance to a level where we achieve new heights. I think that's part of the American dream, and I'm hoping and praying our next president will follow the tradition of previous great presidents to take America to truly new heights.
Interesting that Ben Carson was born in Detroit, as I was.
Well, Ben Carson is a very interesting. I've met Ben Carson, and he's got a remarkable history. He's very serious, very thoughtful man, and the comments he's made in the two debates so far have been memorable. I especially like this comment about him being a pediatric neurosurgeon, and that he was the one of the candidates who'd really seen half a brain, although maybe some who'd beaten him to Washington had experience with half a brain before he did.
Next call. Let's go to John in Wyoming. You're up with Jerry Corsi. Go ahead, John.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
Great show as usual.
Thank you.
Dr. Corsi, if I may I offer you a scenario and then see what your take is on this? When you were talking about Syria a while ago, it is my contention, as with the gentleman who called in previously, that we're the ones, remember, we created Al-Qaeda in early 1980 and funded them and built them up. And we, I believe, are funding ISIS. And what we're doing, we're using this to sucker the Russians into the region. And then when the Russians do bomb and kill these ISIS terrorists, which we have been funding, then we're going to claim, oh, no, you're killing these moderate anti-Assad moderates that we have in Syria. You're not killing ISIS. You're killing the moderates. And their idea of a moderate is someone who only beheads a Christian once a day rather than twice a day. And I think they're using this to try to get perhaps a far bigger war stirred up in the Middle East than would otherwise happen. They're going to sucker the Russians in and then claim that the Russians killed off all these moderates, and they're going to have all the screaming, crying children and things like that, to make us believe that somehow we're funding the moderates when we're not. We're funding ISIS. And then they're going to get this started, you might say, get a war started between the U.S. and Russia over this.
Well, certainly, I mean, the if you remember maybe 2 years ago, maybe longer, when the Obama administration was first talking about intervening in Syria, there were congressional hearings, and the administration was arguing there were moderate rebels in Syria that we could back. And one of the problems was trying to find who the moderate rebels were. I mean, groups like al-Nusra and these other groups have been, that are the rebels, are included among the rebels, are also very violent groups. And it's hard to know which of these groups you would really want to champion, either in opposition to Assad or Al-Qaeda or ISIS. All these groups, unfortunately, do have roots back to, at one time or another, U.S. backing. As I pointed out, we backed the Al-Qaeda-related militia in Libya to overturn Gaddafi, and that's well documented now that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama switched sides and really began supporting the radical Islamic terrorists in Libya, which has only ended up destabilizing the country. I say repeatedly that war in the Middle East only creates more war. And Russia has already once, with Afghanistan, experienced a major military incursion decades ago that failed. And it's hard to say that the United States has really achieved what we set out to achieve, either in Iraq or Afghanistan, although we're still in Afghanistan. The region is a very violent region and has been for centuries. And it's hard to know in the region who you can support without creating more war. It's why I worry about Iran developing nuclear weapons. Not that I want Israel to attack Iran. I think it's going to be a tragedy when it happens, and I think it's going to be very unpredictable. It could trigger a regional war or a world war. Remember, World War I started over similar kinds of miscalculations in incidents that, you know, the shooting of an archduke in Sarajevo triggered World War I.
And Russia, of course, Jerry, is in there now. They're in Syria. If anything happens right now, you've got all the players. They're there.
Precisely. And what your caller was, you know, concerned about was that it could turn into a surrogate war of Russia really attacking groups that the United States had supported and indirectly attacking the United States. This has very unpredictable consequences to it. It's very dangerous. And, you know, the best thing to happen would be to stop the shooting. But how you stop the shooting in one of these incidents like Syria is almost impossible to figure out a solution. That's why President Obama was urging, I believe, the Security Council and the United Nations to, you know, take positive action here and try to resolve the conflicts in the Middle East through negotiation. But that has a very, unfortunately, bad history of working and not working in the Middle East, and going down that path again is going to be very tough to do once the shooting starts. And it's more than started now, with Russia having fighter jets in there and Iran and Russia sending in new troops to fight in Syria. It's an expanding war. That's the reality.
The millions of Syrian refugees who are fleeing that country, are they leaving because the insurgents are chasing them out? Why are they leaving?
They're leaving largely, and they truly are refugees, because they fear they're going to get killed. I mean, these refugees, if you take a look at the map of the Middle East, are leaving largely through Syria, and they're walking into Turkey and heading towards Germany. I mean, these are, you know, people are leaving homes, they're carrying what they can, they're on foot trying to escape. Your heart has to go out for these families who are fearing they're going to lose loved ones if they stay. You know, ISIS comes through your town, who's going to survive? And that's the problem, is that this is also Islamic violence against Muslims, and the region is an extremely violent region right now, where I don't think anyone would want to raise a family. That's the problem.
It's got to be, internally, one of the most serious situations we've seen in years.
Well, it's ISIS has created, I mean, the instability, the Arab Spring did not lead to democracy. And unfortunately, United States backing groups like the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, we were only backing some of the more radical groups. We're funding and backing in Libya, ISIS-related type groups. You know, ISIS is just an outgrowth of Al-Qaeda and all these other splinter groups that, in fact, has our equipment and is fighting with U.S. military equipment, has one way or the other military backing, U.S. backing. We trace the history back. But the history back is, you know, so complex in these situations that what you've got is an out-of-control killing machine in ISIS, and it's very difficult to know how it's going to be stopped. And unfortunately, groups that where ISIS is serving their purpose, like Iran, where ISIS has destabilized Iraq, and Iran sees now the Shiites in Iraq can gain control, you know, in Iraq, you've got Iran entering to fight ISIS, but they're happy if ISIS goes and fights the Kurds. So it's an extremely difficult situation to understand. You know, Iran's happy to have ISIS if it attacks the people Iran doesn't like. And that's the complexity of the Middle East. And the reality is it ends up just being a violent nightmare which does no one any service, and there's no justification ultimately for the violence, and very hard to even understand or explain the violence that's going on in the Middle East. It's a tragedy.
What new projects is Dr. Jerry Corsi working on?
Well, George, I'm working on many. I'm getting very much back involved in a lot of the financial services. I've been very interested in some of and the presidential election coming up. There's very interesting things going on in financial services. Increasing numbers of lawsuits against the financial advisors, for instance, of 401k plans. This Tibble decision, which was a unanimous Supreme Court decision, basically argued that people who sell financial plans in 401ks and advise them have a fiduciary responsibility not to sell investments that they benefit from economically. I think every 401k plan in the nation is now increasingly suspect to a lawsuit.
Jeez, you're talking billions.
Billions. Well, I think there was last year something like $10 billion in settlements of 401k plans being sued. And it's largely unrecognized. But this is a major revolution about to be undertaken in financial services where the Department of Labor, Secretary Perez, is about to promulgate new regulations which will hold financial advisors to fiduciary standards of making the best recommendations for clients, not advising clients on investments that benefit them as the financial advisor financially. And this is a sea change in financial services. And then, George, quickly, the other thing, I mean, I think this presidential election as it's shaping up is enormously interesting because the outsiders, you know, those who are not in politics, Donald Trump's, dare I say, the George Norris of the world, have actually an inside track because the American people seem to be fed up with politicians right now.
There's no doubt about that. You know, I have felt just doing this program over the years, Jerry, that you could feel the pulse of people, and there's a frustration out there. A huge frustration with the status quo.
Well, it goes back to George. I mean, I've followed, since the Kennedy assassination, the government lying to people. It's come down to almost, you know, why do we still have, with the Kennedy assassination, you know, thousands of pages the CIA refuses to make public?
Yes.
More than 50 years after the event. Well, obviously, there's things there the CIA doesn't want anyone to know. And that's, again, you know, politicians have got to realize when the American people decide if the government says it, the government's lying, as soon as the American people get that perception, all professional politicians are in trouble.
Next up, let's go to Henry, truck driving in New York on the wild card line. Go ahead, Henry.
Hey, how's it going, guys? More or less wanting to make a comment based on what that gentleman from Canada was stating about how, you don't know your neighbors anymore or anything along those lines. I mean, I think it goes a little bit deeper than that in the concept that we as Americans happily like to experience change. And when we see something wrong, we like to fix it. But unfortunately, as a country, we go way overboard. And so we've taken political correctness and, like, gone too far into it to the point where we used to be a country that, you know, was tough as nails, and we had thick skin, and we didn't really care. We did what we needed to do to get the job done, and it seems like now, you know, as a parent, we look at each other going, what do we do? You know, because we can't, I think it goes down to even just in the home of discipline and everything along those lines. It's so hard to teach your kids consequence nowadays because we're limited with what we have for resources and tools that allow us to actually teach our kids consequences. So then they become adults and they didn't really experience consequence in the home. And then they become adults, they commit a crime and they go to jail and they go, what's this? Like, is this consequence? Well, we never had consequence. But when I was growing up, and I'm sure when you were growing up, you did something wrong, you feared going home because there was that concept of you knew you were going to be in trouble for doing what it was you did in the first place.
Or you didn't want to disappoint your parents.
Right. Well, and you know, but there's none of that nowadays. Kids don't really care whether they disappoint their parents or whether they, you know, upset the system or anything along those lines. And it's entitlements, you know. Everybody, especially what I've seen from the youth nowadays, and I'm a war vet and a proud server to our country. I appreciate our Constitution and would defend it still to this day. I feel that, you know, everybody has got an impression of entitlements, and we don't work for what we get anymore. We expect it.
Well, that's true. A lot of people expect a lot of things. You know, the old hand is out all the time. John is in Los Angeles. Hey, John, go ahead. You're up with us.
How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I was going to comment. I think the schools, first of all, the problem with the school shooting and all that, I think it's, you know, it goes back to the education and the family upbringing. But it's also, too, you know, there aren't enough youth centers for individuals as well. And, you know, as far as the weapons, I mean, they don't, if they have to, they don't have any sort of metal detectors in the schools. They don't have proper security in the schools. I mean, there's so many factors. And as far as in the Middle East, I mean, also the, you know, the kids are, you know, like you said, one guy said, they're giving people medications now, and those things alter people, you know, people's minds. As far as the Middle East, it's kind of a no-win situation. It's been for hundreds and hundreds of years. Russia and the U.S. being in there is solving nothing. It's not going to solve anything. It's only going to escalate worse. They're wasting their time, essentially, because these are tyrannical governments that have been at war for hundreds and hundreds of years, and nothing is going to change. Anyway, that was my comment.
All right, thanks. You want to react to that, Jerry?
Well, George, I wanted to comment that 3 years ago, I think it was, I interviewed a Dr. David Healy from Great Britain. He's the founder of risk.org, and that's RXISK.org. And he's said an enormous number of these shootings. He's looked at over several decades, more than a decade, something like 90% of the school shootings end up having a tie to the shooter being involved with these widely prescribed antidepressants, these selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or the SSRIs. And I agree that we are prescribing drugs in the United States at a record level without any real understanding of the long-term consequences of these drugs. And I think it's something that needs to be seriously examined in terms of the behavioral consequences, because these drugs have unpredictable consequences for many people.
Jerry, you have done one heck of a remarkable job over the years. What keeps driving you? You just don't stop.
Well, George, I mean, I guess I'm driven by wanting to get to truth, wanting to... your caller a minute ago who mentioned the political correctness. I think we've got far too much political correctness. I've always been impressed in my life by investigative research, what reveals the truth, whether you like the outcome or not, and not ideologically driven.
Well, remember that old saying, you can't handle the truth? I think we can. Jerry, we're going to come back and take final calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to our final segment. George Norrie with you along with Jerry Corsi. And we are going to go live now to Kyle Bailey. Kyle is our news and program director at our affiliate in Roseburg, Oregon, KQEN, 1240 AM. And Kyle, what a tragic day for everybody in that region today. Oh, my God. Our condolences.
Yeah, thanks. And this is way past my bedtime, George. I'm normally getting up in about 3 hours, so this is going to be one of those college all-nighters, I suspect.
I think so, too. I think so. So give us the latest on what we know about this individual, Chris Harper Mercer.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Earlier tonight, I was at a briefing with Douglas County Sheriff John Hanlon. We had a lot of state, regional media that was there. One of the things the sheriff said repeatedly was he was never going to use the man's name because he didn't want to give him the kind of publicity,
the notoriety he wanted.
Right. And so, honestly, our focus has been on a lot of other things this evening, although my desk looks like the hurricane that's back east right now. Just trying to keep up with all the angles on the story here locally. So I honestly don't know a whole lot about him right now. I'm hearing that he lives south of the college, and that some from law enforcement have been out talking with his family today. I will tell you, tonight, George, our community really came together. The Big City Park, where we do summer concerts, we had over 2,000 people that showed up for a candlelight vigil this evening. And Oregon's Governor Kate Brown came down from Salem. That's 2.5 hours away. You know, no big fancy speeches, a lot of short comments from local officials and folks like that. And people just sort of hung out, talked to each other, sang a little bit. A couple ministers prayed. And it was a pretty good end to a pretty bad day.
Yeah, I think so. It's going to take a while for these wounds to heal, Kyle, in that community, to be sure. In terms of the victims, the seven who were wounded, do we know what their condition is?
We don't right now. We know that of those seven, three of those had injuries severe enough that they were taken to outside medical facilities, likely in Eugene or Portland, where the larger facilities are. Don't know the severity of those. Sheriff Hanlon tonight saying, because the FBI is working on this case with the local law enforcement folks, a lot of protocols in place. It's kind of a longer interviews that they have to do with family and get a lot of things documented and I's dotted and T's crossed, et cetera. And so he said it would probably be 24 to 48 hours from today before the names of the victims come out. But, you know, honestly, when you're in a city of 22,000, a county of 100,000, mm-hmm. And you've lived here like me for a long time, the degrees of separation aren't that big.
Oh, I know. Absolutely. And it's going to be days before we get more information about Mercer and what he did. There's already talk that he had been posting over the last day or two on social networking, kind of hinting about this. So we'll find out.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things about Douglas County, people really come together in times of tragedy. We've had a lot of things here. But even when you have today's situation, there's a lot of good people in Douglas County. George, you might or might not recall from about where we at now, 2 months ago, one of the three folks who thwarted the train shooting situation in France.
Yes.
Alex Carlatos.
That's right.
Kid from Roseburg.
Yeah, absolutely. Kyle, so thank you, my friend.
Here too.
You keep in touch with us. If there's anything we can do for you in that community, you let me know, okay?
All right. Thanks, George. Appreciate it.
Kyle Bailey, News and Program Director of our affiliate, 1240 AM in Roseburg, Oregon. Jerry, let's go back to you, but that is one of the benefits, I think, of having this vast program is we're everywhere. And you just heard from Kyle, who is there. He's right in the middle of all this. And
it is, George, and I also commend you. You reach out to so many experts, and you bring them on the show. It's great listening to the show to be get so many perspectives and to get, like we just did, someone who's right there. That's a unique ability that Coast to Coast AM has, and it really distinguishes you in the show.
Well, it's important, Jerry. This program has evolved over the years, as you know, and, you know, we still have our staple of strange and unusual, which is very important, but you've got to adapt and you've got to be ready. And this is radio when it's important.
And well, George, you might want to get ready for the White House. You know, it could happen.
What do I do if that happens?
Well, it's going to be interesting because I think, you know, the idea of a draft movement is not actually impossible, George.
No, that's true.
Year-round. It could happen. And you see the, especially with people being disenchanted with professional politicians. I mean, I'm sure Ben Carson, for instance, never imagined 10 years ago that he would be a serious candidate for president of the United States. But he certainly is. And, you know, others who are Carly Fiorina, even Donald Trump, who have not had a history in politics. And then you look at John Boehner. Leaving after the meeting of the Pope with the Pope. I mean, these are remarkable times in politics, and I think Americans are disenchanted with professional politicians lying to us all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. What if I crossed party lines and asked Ben Carson to run as my vice presidential running mate? So you got a Republican and a Democrat, but you've got good people, honest people.
I think that's a great idea. But I've been watching the polls. One of the interesting things with Donald Trump is, you know, for instance, how much union support he has, how much support he has from traditional Democratic strongholds. I mean, Trump can argue, say on the platform, look, say, you know, I've hired more Hispanics than all of you put together.
Yeah.
You know? And it's true. He is. He's been a great employer over the years of you know, all peoples, and this has distinguished him, I think, to be able to have that kind of a record. But it's surprising. You could cross party lines and have a Ben Carson run with you as a vice presidential candidate. Georgia would be a very popular ticket.
Hasn't been done before, has it?
Not really. No, not certainly in modern times. I mean, originally the Constitution had the president and vice president elected separately. They weren't running as a ticket in the same party. That's evolved over time. But there's no reason you couldn't reach across party lines and pick a Ben Carson to run with you if you did run as a Democrat. And George, it's interesting with you. You're really not either a Democrat or Republican.
No, I'm not.
In your identification.
I mean, call it the way I think it's.
Well, that's, I think, one of the things that's made you appealing to the American people, and one of the things that's distinguished the show is the show does not have an ideological bent. And I think you try to be fair, and the guests try to be fair. You know, whether people favor President Obama or not, we have to deal with the administration seriously and honestly. President Obama is president, and his efforts to run the country as president have to be respected. And I think Americans have to understand that whether they like President Obama or not. So I think the fundamental American people have a fairness to them that is really not ideologically driven, despite our political correctness today and the increasing ideological divisions of the nation. Fundamentally, the American people are fair and want to hear all opinions.
What I would love to do is participate in the first debate. Now, they won't let that happen, but that would be interesting.
Wouldn't that be fun, George? I'd love to have you on the first debate. I'd love to hear you among the either one. I mean, I'd be happy to have you in either debate. It would be very interesting in the first Democratic debate to have you on the stage.
Would they invite me if you're not a declared candidate? I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think they're going to... The news.
Of course, Biden hasn't jumped in yet. And
no, he has not.
And he's going to be on, I think.
No, I don't think he's going to participate
he's
in
not.
The debate. No,
okay.
I don't think so. I mean...
There was talk he was going to.
Yes, but he had to declare before the debate. And he's indicated recently that he's not yet ready to make any declaration. I mean, I think it's going to be very... Biden has got lots of... You know, just lost his son. His son wanted him to run.
Yeah, he's got a lot going on.
There's a lot of, you know, really serious emotional issues in his life that he has to sort out. And, you know, he has got Vice President Biden's got to decide if he wants to make the commitments, a very serious and very difficult commitment to run for president. And if he chose to do it, I'm sure he would be very popular.
Let's go to Treetop, truck driving in Florida. Hi, Treetop. Good to have you back.
Hi, George. It's been a while. It's great to hear Tommy when I call.
Oh, sure is. Yeah, that was a scary situation. Go ahead.
Yeah. Dr. Corsi, real quick, I've talked to you. This is the fourth time now.
Great.
I love to hear Bob Chapman, Jim Maher, Stephen Quayle, Alex, George. And you're the top of all of the heap there. You're my favorite.
Well, you're very kind.
Yes, sir. Now, first off, I have two questions. The first question is ISIS obtaining the military equipment they did. I don't believe in coincidence, and I think it was given to them as a gift. What do you think about that? I think they came upon the stuff, and it wasn't a coincidence.
Well,
they got it.
I mean, it would have to be proven, but one of the ways of looking at politics is to presume that everything happens for a reason. So
right.
you couldn't rule out your assumption to begin with. It would have to be investigated. And clearly, there have been, you know, ISIS has at times been supported by the United States, at least early on. And, you know, if you go back to the record 2 or 3 years ago, the Obama administration was talking seriously about supporting various of these radical Islamic groups who opposed Assad, just as the Obama administration changed sides in Libya and supported the radical Islamic groups that came out of al-Qaeda to topple Gaddafi. So it's not out of the question. There is a history of Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State championing radical Islamic groups that she and President Obama evidently thought at various times could be useful to U.S. aims. And I think that's, we backed the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. And, you know, again, these are very difficult decisions. And backing radical groups is, I think, a very risky strategy, one almost certain to backfire. And I think it has backfired in Libya, and it is backfiring with ISIS, especially if we did consciously support them. But that would have to be proven.
Jerry, you and I predicted and thought several years ago that Israel would go in and take out anything that Iran was doing that might be nuclear. What do you still think that's going to happen? I do.
I think it will happen, unfortunately, because Israel will have no option. That's what I wrote in Atomic Iran in 2005. But, you know, I have been to Israel and interviewed many in the top of the government, and Israel understands how volatile a military attack on Iran is going to be. It's not easy. The distances are large. It's very difficult to attack Iran from Israel, and the consequences are unpredictable. So Israel, it's going to be a last resort. Israel is going to have to be convinced that there absolutely is no other option, that if they do not attack in a military strike, there will be a nuclear attack from Iran on Israel. It's going to take that level of conviction for the government and people of Israel to really back a military attack. And, George, you know, I want to make it very clear that I've always said it will be a disaster when it happens. I'm not...
Oh, apt for everybody.
Everybody. I'm not advocating that Israel attack Iran. I think it will be a disaster. I'm just saying that logically working out the consequences, as I project ahead, I predicted the world community would abandon Israel, and to the extent Israel feels abandoned and Iran continues to take strides towards a nuclear weapon, you know, the clock is ticking, and Israel, like Prime Minister Netanyahu said today, yesterday in the UN, that in the last analysis, Israel will support and defend the Jewish state. And he, Netanyahu said very clearly to the General Assembly today that, invoking themes of the Holocaust, that it will be never again.
This is like end times prophecy, Jerry.
It really is, George. And I get, I've been involved with many of the end time prophecy groups talking to me, because so much of what I've written about, which I'm writing about not from the perspective of end time prophecy, but it ends up concluding things that the end time prophecy advocates and real students are predicting as well. It surprises me sometimes, because I'm a political scientist. I have a PhD from Harvard in political science. I'm not a scholar in biblical studies. That's not my specialty, and I don't try to compete
right
with those who are. But at the same time, it's remarkable how many things I'm writing about that end time prophecy people are also writing about.
I was going to talk with Jonathan Kahn tonight about the Shmita update, but Hurricane Joaquin has blasted his phones, and he doesn't have any phone power.
In fact, he is. WND just wrote an article published about him, I believe, yesterday, with his concerns that, you know, this hurricane was going to strike New York as God's vengeance for the United Nations raising the Palestinian flag.
He might be right.
I don't know. Jonathan is, I know Jonathan. I truly admire him. I think he is a great talent and clearly a dedicated rabbi and serious about his beliefs, a serious student of the Bible. So I respect what Jonathan has to say. But, you know, I don't necessarily see the world from his perspective. This whole 7-year cycle, I think, is very interesting. And it does appear to me that in October, we're going to have another very difficult month for the stock market, and that we are into a kind of a long stock market decline or a readjustment downward that Jonathan Kahn predicted.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Wrote this Shemitah, or however he says it.
Shemitah,
the book on the 7-year cycle. It's a very, very interesting book. And WND has been following Jonathan Kahn also with his Isaiah prophecy, which is extremely interesting, about 9/11. And Jonathan Kahn's books I solidly recommend. I think I've read them, I've studied them, and they're fascinating. And his conclusions are hard to deny, are hard to dismiss entirely, even though I don't see the world from the same end times perspective that Jonathan Kahn sees it.
I hope he's wrong.
Oh, I do too. I hope I'm wrong. I hope Israel never attacks Iran. I hope that, you know, I would like to believe that John Kerry and President Obama are correct that Iran will live up to this agreement.
Well, what do you do, though, when you have a neighbor, Jerry, when you have a neighbor who says, you know, we're going to blow you off the map?
I know. And even during the negotiations, the head, not only Khamenei, but also Rouhani, the head of political head of Iran, were still saying death to Israel.
It's crazy.
And you know, they're sworn to the destruction of Israel. Well, Benjamin Netanyahu made that point, you know, that historically those who have tried to destroy Israel have not done very well. He pointed, looked to the General Assembly and said, there's no ancient Babylonians or ancient Romans here. Those countries which resolved to destroy Israel no longer exist.
Not at all. Jerry, I want to thank you for spending a couple hours with us. Very trying night tonight, and I really appreciate it.
A great honor and pleasure, and my heart goes out to those who have lost loved ones in Oregon.
Thank you. Jerry Corsi. Dr. Jerry Corsi. Up next, strange Texas sights and tales. That's right, Paranormal Texas. Next.